Tell me why I wouldn't want to.
Good afternoon, everyone. It is about 3 minutes after 3 on today, April 15th, and I'm going to go ahead and convene the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development. Mr. Burka, before we begin the public hearing, anything that you need to share with us?
Thank you, Representative Bloomberg. Members of the committee, there's a little material for us today on OLIS. There's the presentation that we'll be looking at on the screens, as well as some background information about the policy option package for the DMV service transformation project, and a memo from the Legislative Fiscal Office about the stage gate process that the IT review is going through for this project.
Excellent. Well, colleagues, thank you for being here. For those that are not here, I'm sure your staffs are listening in. I wanted to mention that we do have work sessions scheduled tomorrow, so we would need a quorum for that. Yes, Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, given that we don't have very much tomorrow and given that many of us that are on full are going to be required to be in Gresham through some horrific traffic, Mr. Garrett, I'm holding you personally responsible for that. Everything else, why not throw that in? If we could finish a little bit early, it would get us on the road and up to Mount Hood Community College.
So, we're planning a real quick hearing, quick work session. And actually, you'll have the gavel, so you'll have complete...
We'll be out of here by 4.
All good. Well, anything else for the good of the order? We're missing some people. If I'm not mistaken, about the only person in this building that doesn't have the sniffles or a head cold is the golden man on the roof. So that might explain some of the absences today. But let's go ahead and convene public hearing on House Bill 5040. Mr. Garrett? Welcome back.
It's good to see you, sir. So good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm Matthew Garrett, Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation. We will move to a conversation with regard to DMV, and Mr. McClellan will walk through the effort that we have engaged in as we move toward the modernization and the transformation of the way we conduct business at DMV. And the tools that we use, specifically the computer system, a legacy aged computer system. I would remind the committee that this is the genesis of this conversation really dates back to 2012. And in 2012, your legislative colleagues, through I think it was Senate Bill 5701, allocated $500,000 for us to start just this work, an effort to modernize the DMV computer system. So we look forward to continuing that conversation with you and the committee today. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to Mr. McClellan.
Welcome, Mr. McClellan.
Thank you. Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom McClellan. I am the DMV Administrator with the Department of Transportation. I'm here to give you an overview of this budget package 140, Service Transformation Programs in the agency's requested budget. I want to talk about the business case for transformation, the funding, and some more specifics about the request itself, and our approach to transformation just overall. So the three things I want to cover for you today. Just a brief history of what got us here, and Director Garrett mentioned the first piece I was going to say anyway, was in 2012, this body approved $500,000 for us to start doing some planning, doing some preparation for the replacement of these very old computer systems and to really modernize our business processes as an organization to improve our services to the public. That funding was carried over into the current biennium, and we've been using some of that as well to hire consultants and help us get ready for moving ahead. In 2013, the report of a consultant was provided to our Transportation Commission that identified a number of issues with our computer systems. They did peer reviews of other states, looked into what their experience had been, lessons learned in those other locations. They ended up developing for us a roadmap for moving ahead and suggested, recommended highly, that we take our time. 9 to 10 years was the time frame they recommended. And they put a price tag of about $90 million on the cost to over those 9 to 10 years, based on the experiences of other states and where they saw us and our status at that time.
Madam Chair. Excuse me, Madam Co-Chair.
That begs the first question, though. With technology moving as quickly as it is, a 10-year development horizon, how do you guarantee against built-in obsolescence by the time you flip the switch 10 years from now?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, one of the approaches other states have used, and we plan to utilize this, is you bring a consultant in, and under their contract, they're required to keep refreshing the technology, keeping the software versions current, and maintaining that when Microsoft changes their operating system, everything else continues to work properly. You put that responsibility on the vendor and not upon the state government to try to get their systems to continue to be updated and refreshed on a regular basis. You built that into the contract as a service that they're expected to provide.
Who is your vendor? Has the contract been let? If it hasn't been let, my next question is irrelevant. Is this a vendor that has some experience in another jurisdiction?
Representative Gomberg, Senator Johnson, we are in the very early stages of planning and preparing a procurement document, an RFP, so we're quite a ways away from selecting a vendor. What we have done is we put a request for information out about 2 years ago, and we had 17 vendors respond to that RFI. We had each of them come in and share information about their companies and the services they provide. Very, very helpful for us, eye-opening for us, to have our employees see how things could be done so differently than the way they are today. We've invited four of those companies back who have successfully implemented systems in other states or appear to be on the path to successful implementations. And over the next, 6 to 8 weeks, we will have those vendors in for longer period presentations so that we can learn more about their systems and the services that they have to offer. Not in a procurement selection venue, but more to learn more about them and the services they provide. And one of the key things we are looking for is that ongoing support. We don't want to finish after 10 years and find that we have obsolete technology that now has to be replaced. We want to make sure that as we build it, it's staying reasonably refreshed and current as state standards go. That's the goal.
A couple of, Mr. Chair, if you give me a little bit of leeway here. Is there a case statement in writing yet? The business case?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, there is a business case document. We have submitted that to the state Office of the State CIO for their review. And we're expecting, in a few weeks, most likely, some feedback from them as far as improvements we may need to make to that document. But that has been provided to them to start the first steps in the stage gate process for the state to get the program started. What's envisioned, I'll talk a little bit more about this later, a series of projects coming out of a service transformation program. And each of those projects are going to have to go through some form of stage gating itself. So we have each of those steps that we need to go through. But at least for now, we have a business case that's focused on that 9 to 10 year period. What's the total vision, basically, that what we're anticipating over that period of time?
A couple more.
Please.
Is there more than one mainframe that serves ODOT?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, there is a single hardware piece, a mainframe, in the state data center used by ODOT and several other state agencies.
Okay, so if the underlying premise is that the system is antiquated, inadequate, out of date, are other users of the mainframe of the same mindset that it is not serviceable?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, it's not so much that the mainframe, the hardware itself, is outdated. It's the applications that have been written, software that's been written, that's housed on the mainframe. Many state agencies are realizing their old systems need to be replaced. They need to buy newer technology. Frequently when that happens, you end up on a different box. You end up on a different piece of hardware than a mainframe system. We're one of the larger users of the state data center's mainframe because we have large, old, COBOL-written systems. I don't know if that answered your question yet, but
it did and it didn't. We just have come from a hearing with Department of Administrative Services, who are talking about the numerous inadequacies in the state data system. We keep changing the name of it to protect the guilty. I think now it's called the Enterprise Technology Services. But this is our same old buddy Scenic, right? And so I guess my question is, on the one hand, and I put this question to George Naughton, on the one hand, we've got Department of Administrative Services saying there are all kinds of problems with Scenic. And now we've got you saying we need to use Scenic as our platform to build a new system. If the foundation is corrupted, why do we want to put more stuff on top of it, to use a bad analogy?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, we're not anticipating that the applications that are provided by the vendor we select in some future point in time would necessarily be housed on the mainframe. It may be housed on different hardware, but still within the state data center, most likely, with that security that it provides, but wouldn't necessarily be on the same box, you know, housed in that same...
If you come off that box, whether it's an ODOT box or a DMV box, what happens to the charges to the rest of ODOT? That's what I'm worried about.
Chair Gomberg, that would be up to DAS in the setting of their rates. They do have the ability to downsize that mainframe. They can ramp it up and they can ramp it down depending on the number of systems that they have to support. So that would, I would assume, I'm not the expert there, I would assume that would cause the rates to come down if they're not paying for as much space on that mainframe. Does that make sense?
No. And I heard that costs are going to come down when we first crack the champagne over the top of Scenic, and it's now $200 million a year to run it. Forgive me if I'm pretty cynical about Scenic, but I guess the other question that I've got is that if DMV's processes are so bad right now, and they're all at Scenic, hardware and applications notwithstanding, why aren't we seeing similar budget requests from other parts of ODOT that have to manage a lot of data? And if your answer is we're the biggest, we ought to be, you know, the most significant, we've now got these 300 new pieces of data that will have to be managed as new voters come online, I get all that. But where is the cascading effect of others in ODOT that are using the same computer? Why aren't we hearing from more parts of ODOT, or has the ability to ask for new computers been set aside until DMV's issues are taken care of? I mean, what I'm saying is if it's good for the goose, it's good for the gander. And if it doesn't work for DMV, why should it work for planning? Why should it work for any other of the units of ODOT?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, I think that's fair that there will be future requests. They're not ready to bring those before you at this time. But we, as you probably know, we have some very old systems that the agency depends on. Our financial accounting system is quite old and should be replaced at some point. It just that we're ready to bring this forward. We have some of the oldest, if not the oldest, systems that are housed on that mainframe and would be representative of all of ODOT as old and needing to be replaced. So I think what you see with this request is highest priority, biggest need. We need to move ahead with this particular request.
All right, some good questions. Let's move back into the presentation.
Presentation, yes. I also wanted to point out that last year this body formed a customer service task force. You asked that a group be formed to look at the service in our field offices. It was an 11-member group. It had three legislators on it, Senator Edwards, Senator Thatcher, Representative Gorsuch, and eight other members, a couple of customers, someone representing the trucking industry, a dealer was also represented. That group met for a period of about 6 months, and their top recommendation, in all the things they looked at and what we were doing, their top recommendation was you need to replace your computer systems. You need newer technology in order to provide better service to the public. Number one recommendation. That they weren't sent off to come up with that conclusion. They came to that conclusion on their own. So I just wanted to reinforce that to you. We brought a consultant in 2013. They did that type of a review that I described. What they found were these legacy systems with a patchwork of code, different modules, segregated systems that didn't really talk well to each other, and noted very difficult to maintain, costly to improve. Difficult to use. Employees found...
Excuse me, Senator Johnson?
Sorry. So you had a consultant come in and say legacy system, patchwork, difficult to use, blah, blah, blah. Was there any independent private sector validation, of, or was it just the consultant's opinion?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, it was the consultant's expert opinion, having done this in several other states in state motor vehicle environments, that they came and said, you are in bad shape. Essentially, that's what they told us. You need to move ahead with replacing your computer systems. And they based that on some of our description of where we want to be as an organization, the type of services we want to provide to the public and to support our various business partners that we have, and where we are today. They said, you can't get there with the technology you're using today. That was the private sector input that we got. We didn't go to private businesses and ask for their input. If that's where you were going with the question, we relied really on their expertise, having been in other states looking at similar types of situations.
What states were their successful outcomes that gave them the validity to have an opinion on our system?
Chair Gomberg, I can't think of any states right at the top of my head. We had them check with half a dozen states that had either failed significantly or appeared to be on the right track.
That's what I'm getting at.
How many of those were there?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I'm doing this anecdotally. I think California has had a couple of abortive starts. Yes. I think that Vermont has. I believe that New Mexico has. And so my question is our consultant allied with any of those failed attempts, and have we been instructed by what failed in those jurisdictions as we move forward?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, I don't know there's any real connection to the company that we used for the planning part. They do not develop systems themselves. They had no interest in whatever kind of solution or recommendations that they put forward, because they don't do that type of work. They did the research as far as what was available at the time. There have been some vendors in the marketplace that weren't there 2 years ago. And so that's other new information for us as we move ahead with procurement to see if we can take advantage of that. There have been some states that have had some successes. One in particular was in Utah. They replaced their vehicle system about a year and a half ago. I believe it was like in 14 months. It was an amazing turnaround time, and they're quite pleased with that system. Those are the success stories you don't hear much about, where a state agency is successful with a new computer system project. They were, and we're very close contact with them. What did you do right that others have not?
How much of theirs was from scratch in Utah, and how much of it was off the shelf? What I'm trying to get at, is there anything we can steal from somebody who did it right?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, the good news is almost probably 99% of what they did was commercial off the shelf. It was available for them to tailor to their needs. There wasn't custom building. They were configuring it to meet their needs. That is a company and a system that other states are now going after because it appears to be a successful model. So as we move ahead, we'll definitely be keeping that particular company in mind.
Are they one of your final four?
Yes, they are.
Okay.
Yes, they are. Not that we're picking a company right now, but when you have a company that appears to know how to do this, you keep them on your short list as you move ahead.
Have any of your four read, or is it contemplated that they will read the autopsy from Cover Oregon?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, we can make sure they receive a copy if you'd like.
If I have my way, that will be built into anything you come out of this legislative session
gotcha.
With.
Okay.
Please, thank you, let's continue. Chair. Thank you, Senator.
So just quickly, the types of things that the consultant found were difficult to use, so employees and requiring employees with in-depth knowledge of these systems. A lot of stuff in their heads about how to use the system. So limited online services. We have very few online services we're able to offer today. And they said, they pointed to other states and this long list of things you can do in other states. That's really the direction that the public expects. Because you're paper-centric, you're error-prone. The more paper you're touching, the more data entry that you're doing yourselves, the more, even though you're checking everything multiple times, there's still the possibility, increased possibility, that there will be mistakes made. They looked at our financial systems. They said really inadequate. too complex, too many manual processes. There are opportunities to automate. There's newer technologies out there that's around point-of-sale systems and the accounting of, you know, just the transactions that we do in our field offices and today through the mail. Very antiquated document management. We still do microfilming. Not many places still do microfilming and work with microfiche, but we do. We have overnight batch processes. It's not real-time data. It's overnight the systems are being updated. So there's a lack of real-time information for people who depend on real-time information, like law enforcement. And then the final thing they mentioned was it's expensive to adapt. And that's one reason why you see fairly high fiscal analysis for us, is because something that seems very simple, that should be just a simple fee table change, it actually gets into the code. We have to make a lot of changes to code and then test all that to make sure we haven't broken something as a result of the change that's been made, because it's older systems not designed with quick changes in mind, which the newer systems and methods are designed to do. So the conclusion was we are not serving our customers as well as it could be. We're saddled with inefficient business processes that are tied to these obsolete technologies. The task force recommend that we move ahead, and that's why one of the reasons why you see this request in front of you. And we have submitted a business case to at least get that started on the stage gate process so that we can begin to move ahead. A lot of people think of DMV and the people we serve as the general public, and we do serve the general public. Nearly everyone in Oregon at some time will have some contact with a DMV office or through the over the phone or through the mail. But what we're trying to depict with this diagram is that we support a lot of different entities, financial institutions with security interests on titles, that ownership document. Insurance providers are providing us information about who's covered and who's not in the state, providing SR-22s and 26s as an alternative, you know, form of proof of insurance. Car dealers. The licensure and regulations of car dealers, of businesses, we have a responsibility there, but they also have an interest in the title and registration process for vehicles to be more efficient than it is today. They serve as agents, really, for us in doing the DMV work in those dealerships. And then dealers also have data analytic type information. They'd love to know more about how many vehicles are being sold in different areas, you know, the age of different vehicles, not at an individual basis, but more gross type information about what's happening in our communities and in the sale of vehicles and ownership of vehicles. I list DEQ here because they're a very close partner with us with the emissions testing and with vehicle registration, all done at the same place in a DEQ station. There are some things we would really like to do with them to link even closer with them, but we can't, because of the systems and the amount of work it would take. Eventually, we'd like to get to the point where online payments are being done for the emissions testing and registration renewal from our website, potentially. So we're actually collecting some money for them in those transactions in the future. We think that'll be a possibility. Courts are very important to us. Many are able to accept electronic citations from law enforcement and from the side of the road. They're getting the citation information electronically, but today they print that out, they send it to us, we data enter it, and then we microfilm it for storage. We need to get away from that, and we're in the process actually of moving it ahead to help the municipal and justice courts to be able to send that their conviction information to us electronically, update the systems, and never have to do any data entry or microfilming. Let's get out of that business, I guess. That's an efficiency for them, and it's definitely an efficiency for us. Law enforcement really relies upon our data. It's the information about the vehicles, about the drivers, the owners. At the very least, they're looking at a 1 to 2 day lag because of this batch processing of our systems overnight. We're updating the systems on the previous day's activities. Any time spent with title transactions where a transaction might be pulled out of the flow to be updated, if there's a special processing required, that means a record is not getting updated. Vehicle may have been purchased, but it's being held up because of inadequate fees or a form not filled out. It just causes inaccuracies in the data that they're working with. They may not have the most recent information, because we have processes and systems that are slow and really outdated. Local government is definitely a beneficiary of all this. We're collecting revenues for cities and counties. One in particular has a special registration fee in Multnomah County. We collect a special fee for the residents of Multnomah County and transmit that money to them. Parking enforcement, they have their own fleets, so they also have a very keen interest in the title and registration process to be as efficient as possible and not be as paper intensive as it is today. They are a definite beneficiary of the work that we're intending to complete over the next several years.
Mr. McClellan, when we collect funds for other governmental entities and transfer those monies to them, is there a transaction cost that we pass along?
Chair Gomberg, let me take the Multnomah County fee, for example. There's a small amount of administrative costs that we take out of it. It's actually pennies. It's less than a dollar, basically, that we are collecting as our costs to collect and transmit that revenue to them. It's a small piece, but it is there. There's a cost associated with the collection that we keep, but it's a very, very small amount.
So what might be a typical amount that we transfer on one transaction? I'm not sure what kind of transactions we're referring to because I don't live in Multnomah County.
Okay. Chair Gomberg, what's more typical is at the end of each month, the fees that we've collected are used to pay our operating costs. And what's left, if it's not designated for some special purpose like a driver education or a senior disabled transit or some other special purpose, what's left at the end of that month is shared with the cities and counties and goes to the state highway fund. Approximately 40% of that net revenue from us goes to local government and 60% to the state highway fund. So it's not necessarily on a transaction basis, it's on a total collected basis. Does that make sense?
Fair enough. And my colleagues are going to get tired of me using the asking questions about credit cards, mm-hmm. but I'm aware that certainly when we accept credit cards that we pay a transaction fee for using them, and I'm wondering if part of that cost is passed along to folks that we're collecting money on behalf of.
Chair Gomberg, the what's proposed, a separate budget package that we have before you, is a package to for the expenditures associated with the processing of credit and debit cards. What's proposed is that the highway fund would pay for that. And there are other alternatives. One would be a service fee, convenience type fee, but a service fee charged to the person who presents the credit and debit card. Another alternative would be a small increase in other fees that everyone's paying so that it's not collected at each transaction, but just something that's built into the overall fees that we collect from people. That's another option. We've looked at that and which types of transactions, like titles and registration and regular Class C driver's licenses, about a dollar increase in those fees would actually generate what we anticipate the merchant fees to be. Right. So if your intent is to try to avoid cutting into that revenue to the state highway fund or local governments, that might be one way you would explore that.
All right. Appreciate your answer. Let's move along.
Thank you.
This next slide, I don't expect you to look at in much detail, but it really is an example of kind of the business case for service transformation. It illustrates the complexity of our current title and registration process. Again, largely paper-driven, manual processes, a lot of decision points, feedback loops, quality checks throughout the process. We've done as much as we can with what we have to streamline this process, but it's step by step we pretty much have to follow because it was built in the 60s and 70s timeframe, really not taking advantage of current technologies. There's a lot of a special processing required. We estimate about 20% of our transactions end up being kicked out of the flow because they're missing some kind of requirement. Form not filled out properly, frequently the fee not being correct. It's been mailed to us, but a lot of times it's not the right fee. Each time something gets kicked out, it adds complexity and time to those transactions. Move on here. The next slide is really to illustrate kind of a transformed business process. In this type of a scenario, we've moved from paper to an electronic application. The information is verified and records are updated more electronically and automatically. Users, the customer, can pick from options like a drop-down menu to make sure that they're doing the right steps for that particular transaction. The business rules get embedded in the system instead of having employees in their with their minds to determine what is allowable and what is not. You've got the system that tells you that. Just the calculations of what the appropriate amount of fee to be collected is done automatically by the system. Enables the users, the customer, to correct errors themselves before it's ever submitted because they get an error message. Okay, you got to fix that. So it actually shifts a bit of that to the person who's submitting it, but the net effect is less time for us and faster turnaround times. I mentioned Utah earlier. When Utah put their system in place, their vehicle system, they're now able to produce a title in 3 to 4 days, where it was closer to what we were doing. Today, we're in the 20 to 25 days is the time period for us to produce a title. And you've actually seen that actual back office process. It's cumbersome, very, very cumbersome. So what we expect with the vehicle titling process in the future to keep pace with the growing demand without hiring additional staff. That would be my goal. If we can achieve some efficiencies in the way this is done, we can avoid adding more people as there are more vehicles in Oregon. As more people are moving into the state and they're titling and registering their vehicles, if we can handle a larger volume with the same or close to the same number of people, that's a savings to us. And that's one of the goals that we have moving ahead. We do anticipate transactions to increase. The latest estimate I've seen as far as population growth with Oregon is about 500,000 people over the next 10 years. And not all of them will be of driving age or will own vehicles, but many of those are. That is additional work that we anticipate absorbing as we go through this transformation, as we are able to do more things efficiently. I will point out that somewhere close to 40% of our employees are eligible to retire in the next 5 years. Through years of service or age. And every time we have a vacancy, we look at that position to determine, does it need to be filled? Does it need to be filled in that location, or does it need to be filled somewhere else? We're trying to...
Mr. Chair, is it my imagination, or does it smell like something electrical is burning?
Or a rubber tire, or something rubber.
Yeah, there's a little smell.
Okay. I don't know whether it's...
Are you suggesting a recess, or should we just be aware?
Maybe just be aware. Anybody sees flames, call.
Yeah, I noticed that as well. Thank you.
It's okay. Not strong, but there is a little something.
Okay. All right, please go ahead.
Okay. Chair Gomber, that pretty much completes our business case part of the presentation. I believe we've clearly identified, we're at the stage we're in right now, that there is a business case for moving ahead. Delaying is costly. It keeps our agency and those that we support basically frozen in time. That's what our consultant described us as, frozen in time. It's not a great thing to be described as, attributed to you. But that's really what they found is when they came in. So I'll move ahead.
Well, let me just back up for a second, if I could. I wanted to ask a question. We had some conversation, extended conversation, about the potential contract selection of vendors, and we kind of danced around this question, but what happens in our contracts if the system doesn't work?
Chair Gomber, one of the things we've seen from other agencies' failures on these types of projects is they haven't been a deliverable-based contract. It's been more of a time and materials. Whatever time they put in, that's what you pay them. We do not want that type of a contract. We want to make sure that we're getting product, you know, deliverables from them that are tested, that work, and then we pay them. And so that's one of the techniques you use, and that's available to any state agency to do that type of a contract. You don't make that final payment. You withhold payments throughout until you're satisfied with the end product, that it's going to work. That's one of the best ways, actually, techniques to use.
Oh, thank you for the answer. Who crafts our contracts? Are they done by someone in your department? Do we have another agency write the contract?
The Chair Gomberg, Department of Administrative Services puts together the template, basically, the basic terms and conditions of our contracts. We get help from them, but we also, within our agencies, have have experts. Our purchasing organization has experts that also help us in putting the statement of work together and any attachments that go with that procurement document. And then when you have made an initial award, then you get into negotiations with those vendors to finalize that contract. But you start with that, the basic terms and conditions that all state agencies are expected to follow.
I think, Mr. Chairman, if I may, excuse me, Representative, just one final piece. There's also the engagement of the Department of Justice to make sure that the contract construct is legally sufficient as well. So there's kind of a three-tier approach. I apologize.
Thank you. Representative Nierman.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McClellan. And I appreciate the tour the other day. So that was a little bit painful, but but hopefully it'll bear fruit. So one of the things that you talked, when I looked at your thing, and you talked about the Utah system, and they have a new vehicle system, and in your system similarly segmented, you have customers and you have drivers and vehicles. That's on the data side, and then even on the application side, and I didn't get to see this as well, but you have other segments. You have kind of your, and I won't articulate these as well as you could, but like the taking a test to get a driver's license kind of application. You had your dealers, where the auto dealers are where you're dealing with that. And I'm hoping, and you can comment on this, that you'll preserve some of those segments on the data side and on the application side as distinct segments, so that you don't have all your eggs in one basket. Right. So, like, on the one hand, when I see a 9-year rollout, I think, oh, that's way too long. You know, that's just not that. And even to Senator Johnson's point of, are we going to be obsolete at the end of the thing? But I think if you roll it out in segments, then you have manageable, maintainable pieces to go. And so I'm hoping that that you're paying attention to that, or that your contractor is paying attention to that. Can you comment on that?
Chair Gomberg, Representative Nierman. You're singing to the choir, basically. You're to preaching to the choir. Get my phrase right. I completely agree with what you're saying there. We have some systems that are newer and working quite well. The automated testing devices, for example, are a vendor provided separate system, kind of an add-on to what we have today. Facial recognition capability, maybe another one you're thinking of, which is a newer type of technology. We don't want to lose those things, and so as we replace the kind of the core foundation type systems that we rely on, we want to make sure that the newer stuff still works. So that'll be part of our, I'm sure, it'll be part of our request for proposals that describes our current situation. What are the things we want to maintain and still make sure that the future systems still operate effectively with those? So build over time. You talk about manageable projects, do it in pieces.
Good.
Step at a time.
Thank you.
Follow up?
Yeah, so that was one of the things I was impressed with, too. So we talk about how the DMV systems are so far behind, but I was very impressed with your facial recognition software there. That's very cutting edge, and very, for me, being a technological nerd, that was very cool to see. So I like that. So just a couple of technical questions here. The current database system that you have on the mainframe, what kind of database is that?
Chair Gomber, Representative Nierman, DB2 is primarily what we're using.
Is that a candidate for going forward, or is that an obsolete system?
I really don't know. I don't think we even decided that, to tell you the truth. Some of this will depend on the vendor that we select and what they prefer, what they've built in other places. That's actually a point worth making, I think, for you, is that if we go with a commercial off-the-shelf system, the state, the agency, is making more adjustments to the vendor than the vendor making adjustments to you. You're accepting their system, and you're going to make some adjustments, and it may require some law changes, certainly rules and policies and procedures, to make it work with that vendor's product. So if that is the approach, and that seems to be more of a tried and true approach for states, you have to be willing to make some adjustments yourself to make it fit with theirs. So the more customization you do, the more risk there is, and the more difficult it is to keep it current over time. All those changes have to be also brought current. So for support as well, you want to limit the amount of customization that you do.
Can I follow again?
Please follow up.
So, and it's my understanding, and I wasn't around when this happened, but that when you talk about letting the software drive the operations at the business, which sounds kind of mean and kind of harsh, but I think that the e-court system had a lot of success doing that, and where they would go to counties and they would say, you know, up against the wall, you're going to do what the software tells you to do, and we don't really care about justice or anything else. So obviously, I'm overstating that case, but the point is that was kind of an effective way to go, is to have the operations meet the software. And I, having seen your operations, I'd be horrified to think that it would go the other direction. And not to blame anybody, but just you have some microfiche and some paper and some old kind of systems there.
Some paper.
The client apps that you have at the customer service terminals there, those are client apps that are written in COBOL that were custom written. Then are they client apps, or are they kind of a telnet type of thing that's running on a server? Do you know on
I'm
that?
I'm not sure. Okay. Chair Gumber, I really don't know. I'd have to bring somebody else up or get back to you if that's a question you'd like to have answered. We can certainly get that for you.
I think just seeing it, I think I know the answer to that question there. So that's all
it is homegrown. It wasn't something we bought from somebody else. We built it ourselves.
Good. Thank you.
Representative Reed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I got here late. I wonder if you maybe already talked about the concept of the technology as a service, as opposed to buying the product and then having to maintain it.
Chair Gomberg, Representative Reed, we have talked a little bit about that the bias going into this is to buy something built somewhere else, used in some other location, if that's the direction you're going with the question?
Not entirely, Mr. Chair, if I could
please
clarify.
Follow.
Not so much the building it for yourself, but saying we're buying this product even if you built it for us, and that's the end of our relationship, or saying we're going to have a contract that by which you provide the service that the software offers.
Okay. Chair Gomberg, Representative Reed, actually I had a question about how do you keep this thing current once you're building it? If you're going to take 10 years, isn't it going to be obsolete at the end of that period of time? The idea there is you have a service agreement with the vendor who built it or integrated it for you so that they're keeping it current. New versions of software, operating systems, making sure that everything that has been provided to you is being updated by the vendor, not the state's responsibility. I think that's a good approach for us moving ahead. You could argue it's expensive. You're paying for that service, but you're going to have to do it anyway. And more, I think it's a better approach to have the people who understand the systems making those types of changes, not the ones who've received it at the end of that project and trying to maintain it. So that's kind of the concept I think we have going forward.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Where are we going next, Mr. McClellan?
Well, let me just cover this slide real quick. And this is some examples of that's kind of the from to. And I think I've touched on several of these already for you. But the concept of getting away from waiting in line to doing more things online, more self-service, kiosks, those types of things are what we want to focus on. We want to enable our business processes, partners. Things like electronic liens and titles, something that the banks, credit unions, dealers would really like to see, where their ownership and security interests are recorded with us electronically, not necessarily with a piece of paper with signatures on it. Something that can be done electronically, similar to what you do with stocks and bonds today. You don't get a stock or a bond sent to you when you buy the stock or the bond. You record your ownership. That's more the concept around an electronic lien or title process. The ownership is recorded, but not necessarily with a piece of paper being produced or passed around. So that's one of the directions we see us going. Less paper is definitely something that we have to get away from. More imaging and more sending things electronically without that paper handling process. So this is primarily focused on customer service. So you notice I'm not calling this the system modernization program from DMV. It is the service transformation program. We really want it focused on the quality and timeliness of the service that we provide to the public and to those businesses and other agencies that depend on us. Four main areas that we're focusing on: service excellence, expanding our service, improving our performance, becoming more nimble as an organization. We cannot call ourselves nimble by any means today, and we need to be more so as change is expected from us in the future. We need to be more nimble. Efficiency is really getting at business processes, becoming more accurate, responsive, convenient. Accountability is important for us as well. We're going to invite perspectives of customers and businesses in this process. We're going to apply very rigorous project management disciplines to this project. That, I believe, is one of our strengths as an organization right now, is our project management and our governance over IT work. I think the Department of Transportation is very strong there, and DMV in particular, I think, is very good there. Modernization, it's upgrading and replacing outdated systems. I asked the vendor, this math tech that came in, how much of our systems do you think we can retain? He kind of smiled at me and said, I wouldn't keep any of it. With the exception of some of the things that Representative Nierman mentioned, some of the newer technology we brought in, they're really looking at these old systems. I would start over, basically. I'd replicate what you have as best you can using tried and true systems from other places.
Well, Mr. McClellan, let's back up and talk about those service levels for just a second. And it seems to me that you did not touch on one of the major shifts that's going on here. As people are coming into our field offices, we're moving toward a less cash-oriented environment. Mm-hmm. And that's going to mean less time at the counter, less time by your staff handling all of that cash, and it's going to be less expense to our clients, who are not going to have to turn around and use the ATM at God knows what expense in order to process paperwork with you. I would think that's a big part of what you've got going on in customer service as well.
Absolutely, Chair Gomberg. I haven't touched as much on the office experience as I probably should have. We anticipate that to be changed quite a little bit. We can get to the point where people maybe fill out the application ahead of time and submit it, via email to us. You walk in the door, and maybe they have a little receipt with a scanner and say, okay, all your information's right here. No need for you to fill out the form. You've already provided that to us. We'll just move you right through the process and renew your driver's license or take care of your registration or whatever that might be. That's going to move people through the offices much faster than they are today. Payments are definitely another area. At the moment, we're planning to add credit and debit cards, not eliminate cash and checks. Now, that could change over time. We could decide no more checks. But as long as we're starting it right now and testing out the credit and debit card capability, we do plan to continue accepting cash and checks. So there'll be less of it. I'm sure fewer people will choose to pay with those methods. We're still going to have some cash handling and some banking type responsibilities.
Well, along those same lines, so we've got an appropriate documentation requirement in place now, where I'm going to renew my license, I need to show proof of citizenship, mm-hmm. either a birth certificate or a passport. Mm-hmm. And when I come back to you several years later to get a new photo that's going to be grayer and with less hair, it seems to me, do I have to come and prove to you that I'm still a citizen, or is the fact that I was a citizen 10 years ago still going to be in your records?
Chair Gomberg, with current law today, you would not have to resubmit that information to prove your legal presence, your legal status. Now, if we ever decided we wanted to comply with the Federal Real ID Act, that might be a different story, because they do require that we would maintain images of those birth certificates and passports and Social Security cards that people present. So in that case, you would have to bring it back in, because we don't have those types of documents, those images today. So as long as current law stays and we're not going to be a real ID compliant state, you will not have to bring those documents back in to reprove your citizenship.
Senator Johnson has a question.
I'm trying to listen to this exchange, and I'm mentally retreading my last trip to a DMV office, and I needed to get my driver's license renewed. It raises the first question that you and I have talked about endlessly. I've been continuously licensed since 18, whenever, when I got my first driver's license.
That was your age, not the year, right? I'm sure.
Thank you. But, yeah, exactly. But the point of the story is that does not suffice. So you would have to have some starting point, as Representative Gomberg was talking about, where you would establish that baseline that Gomberg had proved he was a United States citizen, and from then on we could build on that.
Yes, Senator Johnson, and it's an 8-year license, so we're nearing the conclusion of that 8-year period, because it was 2008 when the legal presence law went into effect. So we're almost through that complete cycle, but we still have people coming in today for the first time to prove that they're in the country legally through immigration papers or citizenship type documents.
Well, I was one of those people, and going back to my experience, I walk into the office. It's a small office. I walk in and everybody goes, "Hi, Betsy, how are you?" I mean, everybody in the whole place knows me. We still had a wrangle about proving who I was. I get my mail at a post office box. I had nothing with me that showed that I actually had a residence. There was a lot of give and take at the counter. We finally negotiated a successful solution so that I could actually go rummage my garbage can to bring back something that identified that I did in fact live where I said I lived. But I'm trying to figure out how a system in a highly person-to-person sort of business, how can you anticipate automating some of that person-to-person conversation out of your systems? You're trying to save money. You're trying to make it easier and more efficient on the customer. But I'm just trying to figure out, there is a certain amount of interpersonal give and take that occurs when anybody is in a DMV office, it seems to me.
Yeah. Chair Gomber, Senator Johnson, you're absolutely right. And that's that people process that we need to maximize. It's the transactions that people don't need to take to a field office, the things that they could do online, that we want to get out of the office so that experience on the transactions where they have to have some kind of interconnection with our employees to show documents, to have that interplay, to have more time to do that, actually. So if you have fewer people queued up behind you, we can provide a better experience for you. Our employees truly become even more so customer service representatives. They're helping you through that process and not worrying about all the 10, 20, 30 people piling up behind while they're answering your questions. We want to get people there who need to be there and everybody else out doing it online or self-service or mailing it or those types of things. That's part of our strategy moving forward.
All right, well, now let's move forward.
So just a diagram here. This project has a heavy technology component, but the primary goal is service transformation. But similar to the rotary phone, moving to the smartphone, where the rotary phone is you're tethered to the wall, can't go anywhere. You can talk on it, but it's nothing close to a computer. It has very little capabilities. Today, what you carry around in your pocket, many of you, not necessarily everyone, but many people are carrying around a mini computer that can do so many things. This is just to symbolize, if we had newer technology, the capabilities are endless of what we could do. I cannot tell you exactly what those things are or promise you certain things. It will be things that we believe will be tried and tested and implemented in other states, being utilized. And we'll bring those things to Oregon. But it really is about getting away from the rotary phone to the smartphone. So it's an analogy more than anything else for you. So the budget request. We are requesting $30.4 million to initiate the first set of projects that are part of this program. Again, total program costs are estimated at $90 million over 9 to 10 years. That's a number we've consistently provided to you and commissioners and others. During the 2015-17 biennium, it will be largely planning, procurement type work, so developing the RFP. Yes?
Senator?
$90 million over 9 to 10 years. Forgive me, Mr. McClellan, that hasn't been my experience. It's gone from 50 to 110 in rooms where I've been sitting.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, I have never given any other number than that. $90 million over 9 to 10 years is exactly what the consultants recommended to us from their experience and looking at other states. They said plan for multiple years, and in that $90 to $100 million price range is not unreasonable for you for planning purposes.
Okay, well then let's take it in a slightly different direction. You're asking us to advance a third of the whole project in the first biennium.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, that is correct.
So I'll ask the same question that I've asked repeatedly as OWIN. Again, we've changed the name to protect the guilty. There comes a time when you're spending that kind of money, where stage gate nomenclature notwithstanding, you cross the Rubicon. You cannot go back because you've spent so much money. I'm really focused not so much on the case statement, because anybody that's bought any kind of technology in the last couple of years knows your rotary phone and new technology is true. But I'm trying to inoculate against the disasters that have happened in the past. We heard Scenic was going to save money and be the end-all and be-all, computerize us, get us all linked up. Failure. We heard Cover Oregon, piece of cake, no problem, $300 million wasted. DMV already has a huge failure in your past. I'm just scanning the QA on the vehicle miles traveled. This document, Mr. Garrett, would make me very nervous if I were in your shoes. And I'm looking for where are the fail safes, because I think this building's tolerance for another catastrophe is very low. And I'd like to see a little bit longer range. This whole thing seems kind of loose right now. Give us $30 million, trust us, and we'll get back to you. And I'm looking for that reassurance that we're not headed in another direction of another catastrophic failure.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, I certainly do not want to follow in the few steps of those other failed attempts. What you hear from state CIO's office with Alex Pettit, I think, makes a lot of sense. Those stage gates, as they're referring to them, are points in time that you make decisions, go or no go. Are we ready or not? And you need to make those decisions before you've committed multiple millions of dollars and have check-in points along the way. What we have included in this $30 million is what we estimate to be the cost of a new vehicle system. With the schedule we've laid out here, I don't think we would spend $30 million next biennium, but I want to be able to say to vendors, our legislature supports the direction we're going. In fact, they've set aside enough money to pay for that. It may take 3 or 4 years to spend that kind of money to replace that system, but at least I can say we've set aside enough for what we believe to be the cost of that new system.
Why shouldn't we as policymakers, given the recent past, say we're going to advance the money through StageGate? I mean, you're basically taking your city and county partners' money under the current construct. You're taking this out of the highway fund. This is $30 million we could spend to do potholes if we chose to do that instead of DMV. Mm-hmm. We're advancing one-third of the project in the first year. Under pretty difficult questioning in the last committee I was in, Mr. Pettit said that you have Tony Black working through this and you've gotten to the second stage gate. I presume you've spent more than $500,000 to this point.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, we're about at $500,000 since 2012.
Okay. One of the things that they did kind of shake my confidence with was that when Mr. Pettit first got there, he asked state agencies, what do you got under development right now? There were 18 projects under review, and when the question was asked, 81 projects across state government came back that they were involved in IT. And so I'm just trying to figure out, why should you ask a very skeptical legislature to advance this much money up front when we know as little about this as we know?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, you have mechanisms at your disposal to have funds unscheduled,
yeah,
to have us come before you with progress reports, with contracts in hand and plans that you then could release the funds to us. That's not necessarily what I would like to get, but I'll just, you know those things. You have tools at your disposal to put limits on how far we go and how fast.
Forgive me for being so cynical, but I was involved in the legislative oversight group for OWIN, the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Network, and we sat in LFO's conference room and got dazzled with reams of paperwork to the point that it was inexplicable to lay people, and legislators, by and large, are lay people. at the end, I don't think any of us that were part of that legislative oversight knew that the product that we were buying would not allow first responders to talk to each other inside a building. Many of us sat through the, quote, rigorous process to get to Department of Revenue. I don't think any of us knew that we were not buying a property tax system at the same time for the amount of money that we spent there. I'm trying to figure out where is the ongoing legislative oversight so that we're not sitting in a room in LFO being dazzled by reams of paperwork, and we have some ability to say stop before we get to that point where we have spent so much money that we cannot go back without betraying the trust of the taxpayers.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, you have staff. We have plans, and this is later in my presentation, we have plans to form an advisory group that could very easily have legislators on there, if that would be helpful. We meet regularly with your IT legislative staff to give them updates on our status, and we try to be as open and transparent as possible with any questions that they have. Candid answers. So.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, my agency would be open to any apparatus or mechanism, much like the task force or the rump group that played itself out in the state radio project when that project was lifted and dropped into my organization. I'd be more than happy to sit around those tables, not to dazzle with bundles of paper. That's not what we were to do. It was to take, at one time, a nearly billion-dollar project and pinch it down to $200 million. So I think whatever the mechanism, the budgetary mechanics or the tools that you have in terms of the discipline that you allocate out money, the unscheduling discipline that you can provide here, and we can certainly provide a time frame for that, as well as any forum you would like to create or we could create. I think the ideal of an advisory committee that has legislative representation on it is very helpful. We've seen it in the past just with some of the earlier conversations about task force who have engaged this issue. And again, understand, as Mr. McClellan said, they landed saying, you've got to do something. So I think my agency stands ready, certainly appreciates everything you have said. And we have taken that to heart as we have moved this conversation forward. So whatever it takes to build confidence, because I understand that we need some wins. We need some confident builders in terms of investments in the IT discipline to show that we can deliver, whether it's a small or a big project. Whatever that takes in terms of what I would term almost an alliance between the executive branch and the legislative branch, let's form something, because we all need wins.
Mr. Chair, I want to be clear on the record, especially for people that are listening to this that may not know. You got the Oregon Wireless Interoperability Project dumped in your lap, and I frankly think it was a mess when you got it, and I think that ODOT performed heroically to do that. My point still is you sat in those very painful meetings, and I'm looking for the kind of clarity, the kind of exchange that if we really are going to have a partnership, make sure we're all speaking the same language and that it's English. And I shouldn't be so facetious about that, but those meetings got so complicated and so down in the weeds that watching IT experts fight with each other was not particularly useful. And you were in there, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. I'm trying to figure out a more transparent partnership, and if there is an advisory group, could it have some private sector folks on it? Could it, besides just the consultants who are the paid guns for the outcome? I'm heartened to hear you say that you want a partnership. I think all of us are gun-shy as all get-out about the possibility of embarking on another nearly $100 million project that feels as tentative. And you may recall that DOR, Department of Revenue, I think went through two biennia of laying out the case statement before anybody pulled the trigger to say, now you can go ahead. And so far they're under budget and on time, but it surprised a number of us that it was missing things that we thought were implicitly part of the transformation of Department of Revenue.
Well, Mr. Chairman, mm-hmm. Madam Co-Chair, I completely embrace your direction here. And please believe me, I don't think there is another agency in state government, because of the history of the previous effort. Now, it was 2 decades ago when the DMV computer conversation played itself out. We have to remember that. But you can see in the course of our conversation, it is still at the surface. So there is no agency that truly understands or wants to break that notion and move things forward. I look forward to working with you and your colleagues on identifying the forum, and we'd be more than happy to ensure that we have public and private sector eyes to help us inform this conversation if we're allowed to move forward.
Mr. Chair?
Please.
Is Mr. McSpadden just here as technical resource if called upon, or is he prepared to make any comment about where you are in the stage gate conversation to this point?
Chair Gumberg, I believe he's prepared to speak to this today, if you would like to hear from him.
I would respectfully like to leave enough time to hear from him.
Mr. Garrett, Mr. McClellan, I think you've got about 3 more slides.
Yes.
Where are we at in terms of time management here?
Give me 3 or 4 minutes. Just to
and I
up.
Won't ask any questions.
Well, we won't hold you to that, Senator, but please.
Okay. Chair Gumberg. Strategies that we're following to mitigate risk. I just want to touch on these. This thorough research evaluation of other states' experiences, that RFI where we got 17 vendors, is an example of something we're trying to do to reach out and learn from others. Leveraging our agency and our Department of Strategic Services procurement experts, partnering with DAS, using deliverable-based contracts, as I mentioned a minute ago, and following the procurement laws and best practices that are out there. Just whatever is available, we want to do the right thing. With the list of projects, basically, that we've identified here, it's probably the second year of the biennium where we get to the point where we have a contract and can really start, where the wheels start to actually turn, because procurement takes a long time. And so, just so you're aware of that. The budget request, broken down by categories, you've got professional services, about $5.1 million. Services supplies, again, $5.1 million. Capital outlay, that's software products, the installation and the system integration services, we've estimated at about $20 million. So that's the breakout of the costs. This is less than what was in the governor's budget, so you may have seen a different number for that. We've actually taken a little over $2 million out of what was requested by taking more time with the planning and procurement and starting some positions later in the biennium, and some not until the following biennium. We've pushed some things out as a result of really looking more closely at what we need.
I can't help myself. You've got installation and system integration. So you're installing a system. Are you not?
Mm-hmm.
I guess I'm looking for what's the rest of the decade look like? What else are you spending money on? Because if you're at software products, that means you've got a product. You're installing it. And I don't know what system integration means as it's displayed here. But if you've got a system up and working at the end of $30 million, what do you do with the other 60 over the ensuing decade?
So Chair Gumberg, Senator Johnson, that'll be my next slide. We'll show you the 10-year period. One last point I want to make on this slide is that task force that I mentioned from last year, they recommended replacing your computer systems. They also recommended that we raise our fees slightly, $3 actually, is what they recommended, to cover the cost of that investment in new technologies. That's not what's currently proposed by the agency, but that was an observation and a recommendation that came out of that task force.
Across so, all of your products? So
no,
be-
just the smaller set. Excuse me, Chair Gumberg, Senator Johnson, just a smaller set. I think I actually mentioned a list of some services we provide today. Not every single service would get that increase, and we can provide that list to you, or committee staff, if you'd like. So the approach to transformation, and kind of building from the bottom up here on this slide, the next biennium is largely still that readiness, that planning, being clear on scope, getting that procurement document out there, and being ready to select a vendor that can lead us through this. We have some core kind of foundation type capabilities, data managing, imaging, point of sale in our field offices that was also asked about a moment ago, and expanding our website capabilities and just still getting ready. But the vehicle title and registration system is the major first system we believe we need to replace. And one reason for that is that's really where our revenue collection is handled. Title and registration revenue being the largest source of revenue that we are collecting for the State Highway Fund and for local government. It's one of our older systems, very complex. needs to be replaced. We want to do that first. Then you get into the driver licensing, driver privilege management types of systems that we have today with suspensions and things like that, driving status, and records as well, coming later on. So we're kind of building this incrementally. And the consultant recommended, he called it a program of manageable projects. These are sort of independent. They're not tied to each other. They need to talk to each other as you build incrementally. But if something, if you run out of money and you want us to stop, we should be able to stop at the end of the vehicle title system and still be able to operate as an organization.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
Where in this timeline comes your ability to integrate potentially 300,000 more pieces of data into a system that you describe as antiquated and failing with the motor voter?
Okay, Chair Gomberg, Senator Johnson, the motor voter bill that you're referring to is describing a function that we do today. We send data electronically to the Secretary of State's Office, the Elections Division, for the purpose of voter registration. There's online registration today. When someone wants to register to vote, there's some checks against our database, but then data is sent with a signature, actually, to the Social Security Secretary of State's Office to complete the voter registration process. Even though there's more people, it's really building on something that's already there in place. There's not new data elements that we're now being required to collect a higher volume, but it's mechanisms that we already have today that we're going to utilize to send that data to them. People can opt out, obviously, as part of the process, but it's not building new records. It's not building new systems. We're not adding new data elements.
But this is the same DMV, though I wasn't present, but it was relayed to me, and maybe Ms. Joyce can help, that was complaining about an inability to make a linkage with parks. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm trying to, perhaps Ms. Joyce remembers what that was, but there was a bill that was requiring an interface between DMV and parks, and I don't know who provided the testimony, but it was relayed to me that that was going to be an impossible task to discharge without lots of money and more people. Ms. Joyce, I would invite having my recollection of that refreshed.
Co-Chair Gomberg, Co-Chair Johnson, members of the committee, my name is Amy Joyce. I'm from the Department of Transportation, Government Relations. There's a bill this session that has to do with the Department of Parks and linkage from the DMV website. The original idea, the concept from the legislator who brought that bill was to have DMV collecting collecting money and issuing parks passes online and through the DMV office. That kind of interface, collecting money for another agency and issuing documents from another agency, would be a wholly new system. And it was relayed to that legislator that that would be quite an expensive proposition. Where the bill came down was providing a link on the website. And the reason for a bill, rather than just doing it, which certainly DMV has that capability and could do, it was the idea that many, many, many entities, public, private, nonprofit, come to DMV because we touch everyone and want us to put things in our office, put things online, do these things for us. And so the concept there was we can do this thing, but perhaps by putting it through in a bill, it shows a need that rises above the many, many other requests that come through.
Thank you.
Senator Hansel.
Mr. McClellan, I just want to make sure I understood kind of what I think you said, that the additional 300,000, it really isn't going to be that much of a workload, isn't going to be that big of a deal with your current system?
Chair Gomberg, Senator Hansel, it means more names, more records actually being sent to the Elections Division, but we're already doing that today. I mean, it's just a bigger file, basically, and more data being sent, but not new systems being built. There's not new data that we have to collect as a result of it. It's really expanding upon what's already there and building some new processes, because it is a different way of doing the voter registration, clearly, very, very different. But as far as the impact on us, it doesn't add a lot of systems type implications for us. I know you're trying to move along here.
Senator Van Roo.
What I would like to have is, instead of this breakdown by biennia, a breakdown by, say, every 6 months, mm-hmm. with the dollars set aside and released by the e-board or the session, whatever happens to come up at that 6 months break, so that we can follow exactly your progress and your success or failure as we release the dollars, rather than just give you $30 million right now and go do good. I'd break that down by approximately every 6 months, with the tasks that are going to be ongoing and developing. And I think that would give the legislature and my colleague here a little more comfort over time.
Chair Gomberg, Senator Monroe, that's certainly something you could do. We'll have more specifics to provide once we do have a vendor with a true plan of moving ahead. That's probably 18 months, 24 months potentially out before we're actually to a project plan. We can hold a vendor's feet to the fire, basically. But in this planning phase, we could have similar types of milestones if that's what you preferred.
Yeah.
Representative Whitson?
I agree with Senator Monroe's suggestion. I was going to suggest maybe $10 million a year, but I actually like the every 6 months much better, and see what you're doing with it and release it when we see exactly what you have for us and what you've done with it. I think it's a great idea.
And Representative Nierman.
I kind of don't like the 6 month thing, but I think Senator Johnson actually had the right thing. Is I would like to see the money released by stage in the stage gate process. So if it takes you 2 years to get through a stage, then you get your $5 million. So maybe that's kind of a more logical breakdown than by time or whatever. So are you gonna do the stage gate process for each segment of the thing? So like we talk about the vehicle system, and then you have the driver's system. Are you going to have a stage gate process for each one of those?
Chair Gomberg, Representative Nierman, we anticipate doing that with each of our major projects, phases that we roll out. Yes.
Good. I think that's appropriate. And then I think the disbursement of the money according to stages in each one of those is appropriate too. So we might get back 10 or 12 opportunities to review the whole 10-year process.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right.
So four things there. I'm not going to talk about them. But those are the four things, our approach: learning from the past, benchmarking from best practices, communication. Those are things we know we have to do. Approach to transformation around governance, basically. And here's where that external strategic advisory group comes, where we were just talking a minute ago, where there might be a legislator that would be on that. Department of Administrative Services, a customer, key stakeholder, a private sector IT person, potentially, or two, who has experience in this field. We're open to that. We haven't set the membership on this because we don't have the funding to move ahead yet. But once we do, we'd like to get those types of pieces in place so that we can limit the risk of failure. So we want to be as solid as we possibly can. Internally within ODOT, a steering committee with key leaders within the organization. We call it our user council internally within DMV, so at a project level, individual projects. Besides the project team and a steering committee, we have a group of senior managers in DMV looking at that portfolio IT projects and making sure they're individually staying on track. So the pictures here really are to show our staff are great, and we have great customer service. It's just the tools that we provide to them to do their job are subpar. We are not able to do as much as we would like to help the customers, the people we serve in Oregon. to us, it's not a matter of if we should do it. It's more of when. How fast can we do it? We have to do this. It's been put off far too long. We did have a misstep, called a misstep, 20 years ago, a massive failure, basically, with replacement of our computer systems. We got to get back on the horse, though. We were kicked off hard. We landed on our head, and now we got to get back on it. The systems are 20 years older than they were then, when the business case was good enough to say go. And so we're here before you to get your approval on a direction moving forward to change the way we do business and replace these very old computer systems. So those are my closing comments for you, and any questions you might have.
Any additional questions? Mr. McClellan, thank you very much for the time you spent with us today.
Thanks.
Mr. Garrett, you've got a few other people to share.
Well, I think Mr. Chairman, Senator Johnson would like to hear from Mr. McSpadden, who brings a discipline and a different perspective to the stage gate discipline. So,
good afternoon. Co-chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sean McSpadden. I serve as a principal legislative information technology analyst for your legislative fiscal office. Additional roles that I play on behalf of LFO, serve as the IT subcommittee committee administrator for that subcommittee of the joint committee on Ways and Means, and also the committee administrator for the Transparency Oregon Advisory Commission. As part of my role for LFO as a principal legislative IT analyst, I provide legislative oversight for major IT projects. There are two of us within the Legislative Fiscal Office, Bob Cummings, who many of you may know from years past, and I basically split up the portfolio of large IT projects. One of the agencies that I oversee is the Oregon Department of Transportation, and certainly have been working with Mr. McClellan, Mr. Garrett, and others for many months, along with Julie Nimberka, the LFO budget analyst, and the Office of the State CIO. Ed Erebus is the analyst for the Office of the State CIO. He's here in the audience as well if you need to hear from the executive branch. In preparation for this particular hearing, I did provide a memo for the committee. It is posted on OLIS. It provides a high-level background of the project along with our analysis and recommendations. In the interest of time, I think you've heard this is a program. It's called the Service Transformation Program. I can't emphasize enough, this is not a single project. This is a series of manageable projects within a larger program. The department and the division certainly could have come forward, in my estimation, with individual project requests, somewhere between 4 and perhaps as many as 10 or 15. They could have come forward each biennium with a couple. Instead, I think, and rightfully so, they have tried to take a more holistic view of all of the DMV core systems. They've tried to describe for the legislature what a 10-year plan will look like, and it seems, you know, a very understandable, very prudent approach for them to take, and we certainly have appreciated having the full picture before us so that we can provide analysis and recommendation to you all about how the money ought to be dispersed over a time frame, either in line with the stage gate review process or on a general time frame synchronized with legislative hearings, with the annual session, e-board meetings, et cetera. Just kind of flip forward here. It is worth noting that since 2012, the department and the division have been very actively involving the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Office of the State CIO in project meetings. They've been providing regular status reports to us. They've invited us, and we've attended, as our schedules allow, to the request for information presentations from vendors to better understand what's available in the marketplace. They've developed, according to the stage gate review process, they've delivered a high-level business case, a high-level implementation strategy, and they've begun to outline the steps that they plan to take proactively in the 15-17 biennium and have identified their initial request. Again, approximately $30 million, approximately 30 FTE. As Mr. McClellan indicated, according to the time frame, it would be very, very easy, and or it would fit within the schedule for the division to come back in the annual session to prepare to do regular reports at each of the interim meetings of the legislature and or the e-board between now and, frankly, the 17th session. The vendor that the division has talked about hiring, at this point, it's very likely the vendor will be a systems integrator, unless the department gets very lucky, as the Department of Revenue and the Oregon Judicial Department has been with being able to find a single vendor with a single system that has all of the functions that the DMV needs. They most likely will have they have a need for a systems integrator that helps them plan, design, and deploy multiple systems that fit together, that really meet the full needs. At this point, their initial analysis hasn't identified a single vendor that could provide all functions. As Mr. McClellan indicated to Representative Nierman, there are some existing systems that they've recently replaced that do work that likely will be kept. Even those systems will need to be integrated with the core solution and supplemental solutions that the department and the division acquire over time. Let me see if I had any other points to share with you. I would draw your attention to the memo that is posted on the list. We provided a series of detailed recommendations to this committee. If there had been time, we likely would have run them through the IT subcommittee and had that subcommittee forward them formally to you all. We'll likely do that with other projects that fit within your domain and within the domains of the other subcommittees as time allows in the future. But I'll just read through just to get these recommendations on the record. Clearly, as I mentioned, the department and the division has worked very closely with us, with the Office of the State CIO. We'd certainly like that to continue, and we've recommended that it continue formally. We recommended that they continue to follow the joint stage gate review process. It is important to note that that is not an executive branch only process. It's not a legislative branch only process. We've come together and agreed on a common set of standards, on a common set of criteria that these projects need to meet in order to be ready, deemed ready, to move to the next stage. The next piece, as I mentioned, the division has produced a high-level business case. As they move forward in this biennium with additional detailed planning, perhaps as they hire the systems integrator, they will have more information available to them. We want them to update that business case. They also do intend, with individual solutions, over time to conduct cost-benefit analysis, alternatives analysis, and run them individually through the stage gate process. We're essentially asking them and or recommending that they do what they've already said they're going to do in that area. In regard to project management, with all of these large projects, as Mr. McClellan indicated, the lessons learned from failures and successes of the past. We have had successes here in the state. You just simply haven't heard much about them. But certainly for the failures, project management is right at the top of the list as a failing area for those projects that end up in the tank. And we, generally speaking, we would agree that this department and this division in particular does in fact have a track record over the last 10 years of successful projects. We did last year in about the June timeframe, we were asked through a public request from one of the members of the media to look back historically at the large IT projects that have been implemented since 2006. We have posted that on the LFO website. There were about 66 projects implemented during that period of time. I believe ODOT and DMV had about 20 of those projects. 15 of them were successfully completed, but another five or so are currently active. One of them includes the state radio project. We have a couple of projects within DMV, the microfilm replacement project, the driver's license issuance project, that are still ongoing. Another recommendation we made was that once they hire point or contract for those project management resources, that they develop the foundational project management documents that are required by the stage gate review process, that they work with the Office of the State CIO as they're required to do under House Bill 4122 that was just passed in the 2014 session, to hire a QA contractor, have a risk assessment done, have quality control reviews done on all of their documents so that an independent third party, in addition to the Office of the State CIO and LFO staff, are reviewing those documents, making sure that they're according to HOIL. Subsequent to that, as required by the state CIO, that the department continue with ongoing quality assurance services. And again, this department, this division is very familiar with external quality assurance. They've used the services of external firms as required by the Office of the State CIO for the last 10 plus years. So we fully anticipate they'll be able to do that. Very quickly, I'll finish up. When they're done with all of that, they need to submit the business case, the project management documents, the risk assessment, other documents back to the Office of the State CIO and your LFO for a stage gate review prior to execution. So all of this is the stuff they have to do in order to get to get in the car, get a set of keys, turn the engine on. They perhaps can get to that point, but they can't put the car in drive until they come back to the legislature and ask for approval to move forward. And you'll have at that time our recommendation. You'll have the Office of the State CIO recommendation, whether it's a go, no go, a conditional go, or no go. We certainly recognize that now that the state CIO has been appointed, there's a renewed focus on oversight. They have made a request for additional staff. We support them having additional oversight staff to be able to complement the needs of this kind of stage gate review process, and the fact that we're both we're not operating under separate rules. We're now operating under common rules and criteria for these projects that we believe we should be able to come back with a willing partner in an agency that knows they have oversight and compliance obligations, and here to date they follow them. They've met them. And then lastly, the legislature, as you may know, in December did authorize expenditure limitation for the Office of the State CIO to deploy something called a project and portfolio management system. That's an automated system that will essentially handle the workflow of all of this review and approval process, the stage gate review process. It will also be a repository for these key documents. The legislature, through the Legislative Fiscal Office and the Office of the State CIO and partnering agencies, user agencies will have access to this system. So we'll finally have a historical record of what was done, what decisions were made, on what basis they were made over time, as opposed to kind of relying on elephant memory of what may or may not have occurred in the past.
Representative Whitson.
So Senator Johnson asked, and I think you said $500,000 has been spent right to this date, where we are right today. Is that correct?
Co-chairs, Senator Whitson, or excuse me, Representative Whitson, I believe that's correct. I would tell you my tenure in the Legislative Fiscal Office started in late 2013. I believe that initial allocation was made in the 2012 biennium.
Okay, follow up. So the work that's been done so far, can you do a short synopsis of it and send it to us, what you did for the $500,000? Was that done internally within ODOT, or did you hire externally for consultants to get right to where you're at today? And I was wondering if you could also tell us how much is the total cost you anticipate of the $90 million going to outside vendors, to employees outside of ODOT's 3,500 employees that they already have on staff. And if you could get that to us, would be great.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we certainly will.
Senator Johnson.
As part of your responsibilities as the LFO analyst for the information technology for ODOT, have you been tracking the road user charge project?
Co-chairs, Senator Johnson, yes, I have. And we've had a similar experience with Mr. Garrett and his executive leadership team. This particular project has had a very rapid implementation timeline. It's mandated within the Senate bill that was passed. They've had regular oversight by the independent QA contractor. I believe you have the most recent report. The reason why these reports are monthly instead of quarterly is that there is such a rapid implementation time frame. We do see from time to time dramatic change from one report to another. We believe that in talking with the quality assurance contractor, although they've raised some current period risks around the number of volunteers that have been recorded to date that come up to the 5,000 that were called for in the pilot. They've identified some concerns about whether the 5,000 will be reached. And then second, they identified some risk regarding onboarding of the account managers. That report was issued April 6th. On April 9th, we received follow-up from the road user usage charge program manager that the vendors now are onboarded. Testing is occurring this month. We do expect the April report to reflect that activity, and we believe that certainly the risks that have been identified have reached all the way up to the director of the department, and they're being mitigated to the extent that the department can.
Could you send that April correction? Because when I read in here, all account managers are having difficulty meeting the project schedule. All three account managers will start the operational trial late. The date has slipped multiple times, and it's not projected to get better for the next reporting period. I'd love to hear how it's getting better. The device is still not apparently working, the dongle, now my new word, that there's bickering internally. Are you satisfied with this?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, I certainly, I wouldn't use the word satisfied. I think for any major IT project, there are bumps in the road. Projects move, as Mr. Cummings has been off to say over time, typically of this kind of size, move from ditch to ditch. Your goal is to keep them on the road, to keep them running forward. And this particular project, because it has an immovable implementation deadline, will experience more rapid change. In regard to those risks, I would tell you certainly the first few reports that came out from the quality assurance contractor identified issues with multiple facets of the team. They identified communication issues early on. I would tell you by the next report, and certainly in direct meetings with Mr. Garrett, the QA contractor reported to us and the state CIO directly that those issues had been mitigated. So every time an issue comes up that the agency has an ability to deal with, address, to date, their track record has been very good.
As of April 6th, some of the issues that you just mentioned had not been resolved to the QA's satisfaction, and I guess I'm looking for the reconciliation. And what Mr. Cummins describes as moving from ditch to ditch, some of us have had the unpleasant task of standing in front of rooms full of very annoyed Oregonians explaining a $300 million trip to the ditch.
Senator Johnson, Chair Gomberg, members of the committee, I think falling off a cliff would be a better metaphor for that particular project. I will tell you, though, we certainly can follow up with the information we got on April 9th, and then I'm sure we can work with Mr. Garrett to get a more recent update. Again, this is a very, very fast-paced project, and we typically get updates every few weeks.
So if I may, Mr. Chairman and Madam Co-Chair, I don't want to leave a bitter taste in your mouth, because that would be wrong. You're correct, you're reading correctly, but there's a lag in the documentation. Let me tell you, using, and by the way, I pay Public Knowledge, who is the management oversight here, to identify these risks. They get paid for doing this. But on the 13th was our last meeting, and we were sitting around the table, and I said, tell me the risk. And they are ongoing risk. But the two folks from Public Knowledge said, listen, all the risks that we have identified now have moved into the monitoring only stage. And I said, well, tell me, because I don't want to misrepresent anything. Tell me what that means. And their words are, that means this project is stable and moving in the right direction. It doesn't mean it's not without risk, but rather than having to aggressively engage an issue, some of the turnaround times that Mr. McSpadden spoke to, we have now taken this, identified those risks, mitigated those risks. We always are going to have tensions here because this project has never been done before. This is the first time. That's a risk by itself. And then some of the constructs, the time frames and the scopes, they're fixed in the way we do things. Those are risks, too, identified. We had interpersonal relationship issues. I've got an all-star team of very brilliant people working together. They clashed. We had leadership issues we had to talk to. It was the evolution of bringing folks together to do something that has never been done before. And I think over the course of time, if you really start when the initial risk assessment started to where we are just last week, the 13th of April, you can see an evolution. We're not perfect. We're going to hit these bumps along the way. But again, July 1st, 2015 is the date we will flip the switch and the mechanisms will work.
That's fair. Thank you.
Rip Nierman.
Thanks. I have just a couple of really quick questions for Mr. McSpade. First of all, is there a way to get ongoing self-service access to the stage gate artifacts for the DMV project or any project? Are those posted somewhere on LFO or on the transparency website?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, Representative Nierman. To date, because there has not been an enterprise portfolio management system, access to those documents has been limited. However, they are public record. And so, you know, there has not been a proactive posting of information over time. However, it is available upon request to the Office of the State CIO. That's where it primarily goes to, from executive branch agencies to that office. Certainly, with the deployment of the Enterprise Portfolio Management System, enhanced access will be possible. I believe that the intent, at least initially, is to for the office to focus on just the largest projects, the $1 million and above, the projects that are under quality assurance oversight, and there likely will be a posting at a date certain. It hasn't been set yet because the system hasn't been fully deployed yet. There likely will be a report of public status of those projects. I don't yet believe that they're at a point where they'll be able to proactively post documents, but certainly we could arrange further conversations for you offline.
Good, thank you. That's all.
All right. Any other questions? Thank you, sir. Mr. Garrett, anything else for the day?
I think we're completed for the day, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. I'm going to go ahead, colleagues, and adjourn the hearing on 5040. Before everybody hit, colleagues, and adjourn the hearing on 5040. Before